Jacksonville commemorates World AIDS Day this week as the AIDS Memorial Quilt comes to City Hall. Just ahead, a look at what's being done to reduce the spread of HIV and AIDS in our area. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. Hope you had a great Thanksgiving holiday. We are always live at 9, and make sure to get our podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, or through our app. Just ahead, an update on what activists fighting HIV and AIDS are doing here on the First Coast. Get on the line now, 549-2937. Then later, it's First Coast Success on the show as Karen Bruni Mathis profiles one of the most interesting and unusual businesses around, Eco Relics. Plus, Cole Pepper will stop by with a look at the Jaguars' playoff hopes after that loss to Arizona over the weekend. All of that and more ahead this morning. But first, this hour, the famed AIDS Memorial Quilt is the focus today at a special ceremony at Jacksonville City Hall. Jacksonville Mayor Lenny Curry will read his World AIDS Day proclamation at this special event. It will also include HIV and AIDS advocates, people affected by the virus, and a ceremony to remember those lost to AIDS. In its 18 years of display, the AIDS Memorial Quilt has traveled the world and had hundreds of thousands of visitors. Now, this free event is part of a series of World AIDS Day events happening across town this week. All this as local advocates work to raise awareness about the importance of prevention and testing. It's especially needed in Duval County. We have the third highest HIV and AIDS infection rate in America. Lots of work to do. Here in studio, we're pleased to welcome Justin Bell, a local HIV and AIDS advocate and peer counselor. Justin, good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Also with us, Dr. Max Wilson of the North Florida chapter of the NAMES Project Foundation, tied to the AIDS Memorial Quilt. Doctor, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here, Melissa.
And as Jacksonville marks World AIDS Day, what are your thoughts about this now decades-long battle against this disease? Give us a call. 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online, send your emails to firstcoastconnect@wjct.org, tweets to @MelissaInJax, or you can weigh in on our Facebook page as well. And let's begin with you, Justin. As I mentioned, a big event at City Hall today at midday as the AIDS Memorial Quilt is displayed. This quilt has been such a wonderful symbol of remembering those lost to the disease and raising awareness to treat the disease. You'll be on hand, of course. This is a big deal for Jacksonville to have the quilt come to town.
This is a huge deal. And, you know, Melissa, in the 18 years that this quilt has been on display, or a portion of the quilt has been on display at Jacksonville City Hall, this year we will be honored with the presence of Mayor Curry. There is just a small portion. We currently have 8 blocks of the AIDS Memorial Quilt on display, and they will be on display through December 6th. Some of those blocks have memories of Arthur Ashe and some of our National Theater major stage actors.
Famous people who we've lost to the disease.
Absolutely, along with lay leaders and other professionals.
Dr. Wilson, the AIDS Memorial Quilt, it began with one little panel 30 years ago, and now it's this epic tapestry that's traveled the world. The NAMES Project Foundation works to raise awareness. Can you tell us how the NAMES Project Foundation is affiliated and what the work involves?
Absolutely. So the NAMES Project is an international organization that is responsible for maintaining the quilt, which is now so large that it can never be displayed in any one place at any time ever again.
Oh, wow. So only a few squares of the quilt go from city to city.
Right. One of the purposes of the project is to establish chapters in major cities that have been affected by the HIV epidemic and to allow them to, every year or on World AIDS Day, to request portions of the quilt so that the quilt can, in fact, be displayed all across the country.
You can come out and see this special unveiling and ceremony today at noon at City Hall in the atrium right there in the entrance. World AIDS Day is Friday, December 1st. What are your thoughts about the campaign to raise awareness about testing, prevention, as we talk about World AIDS Day. It's really a week-long event in Jacksonville. 549-2937 to join us. And Justin, as Dr. Wilson said, we're getting the quilt in part because Duval County has one of the highest HIV and AIDS rates in the country. I don't think people realize that, what a big public health issue it is in Jacksonville, right?
It isn't realized. And I don't know that we could necessarily do enough. One of our biggest challenges as advocates is eradicating the stigma as it relates to HIV and AIDS. And you know, we can't eradicate that unless, one, we become comfortable in talking about it, and we become comfortable in testing.
Testing is so important. And let's share your story. You are a guy who never thought you would be HIV positive, but you did become HIV positive through a medical procedure in 2001. Is that right?
That is correct. And very surprised that to find that one day I would be HIV positive and that I'd still be here.
And you're still here 16 years later.
Absolutely.
It used to be an absolute death sentence. Medical advances have made this a disease people can live with, and you're living proof of that. But despite that, I think it's lulled people into this false sense of security that it's not a problem anymore because people are no longer dying so terribly. What are some of the biggest misconceptions about HIV and AIDS that you'd like to talk about?
Well, I think one of the most concerning things is that, you know, individuals should be tested, and those who are tested begin treatment early on. Without treatment, we will we'll still have the occurrence of HIV-related and AIDS-related deaths. So the advocacy to encourage individuals to test for those who are sexually active within the high-risk groups to test at least once every 6 months. And I personally would like to see everyone over the age of 13 test at least annually.
You think it should be as common as any other routine medical procedure, like getting tested when you go in, they automatically put the cuff on your arm and test your blood pressure. You want it to be that common, right?
I absolutely do. And part of my story is that I wasn't tested for HIV. And at a time when I was having a lot of medical issues, we were not testing for HIV as just a procedure. And had I have done that, I would not have progressed into an AIDS diagnosis as I did.
Dr. Wilson, this is fascinating and disturbing to look at the statistics from the Centers for Disease Control. All new cases, most new cases, I should say, nearly half, are attributed to people aged 55 and older. AIDS and HIV is spreading among older Americans.
Older and younger. So those are the two populations that are really driving the epidemic. And I think that it's very possible that the prevention messages and health information that we've been very, very diligent in pushing out to the public over the last 20 or so years have been impactful with Generation X and Generation Y, but with millennials and with baby boomers, that's not necessarily the case.
And is it that, let's talk about both populations. With baby boomers, they're still having sex, but they're not having protected sex because they mistakenly think, oh, I'm not going to get AIDS.
Sure. Yeah. Changes in marital status, age-related changes in lifestyle and so forth have created a condition whereby folks are at greater risk. You know, new partners, new opportunities to pick up infection.
World AIDS Day is Friday as the AIDS Memorial Quilt comes to Jacksonville. What are your thoughts about getting tested, awareness, prevention, reducing stigma around the disease? We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. Give us a call. And so, as Dr. Wilson said, graying baby boomer Americans are getting lots of AIDS cases and really young people. They're not getting the message. They're not getting the message about protecting themselves if they have sex and getting tested. Where are we falling short as a country, Justin, in educating young Americans about this?
It does actually come down to education and the lack of space. We need to have our elected officials and our spiritual organizations come together to help put that education and bring that education piece together. We can't go to church and talk about it. And, of course, many of our elected officials are also a little hesitant to talk about those statistics.
And when you say education, are you saying that there should be comprehensive sex ed in schools and talking about the spread of diseases like HIV and AIDS? Because more often than not, kids are getting abstinence-only sex education in schools. Not everywhere, but that is certainly a large portion of young people. That is what they're being taught.
I absolutely agree. Sex education should be taught, and this should be HIV and AIDS should be a part of the curriculum within the school. And we are fooling ourselves if we don't think that our sons and daughters are talking about sex at the age of 13.
Dr. Wilson, also, eradicating stigma around HIV and AIDS has been a decades-long process. People don't go to get tested because they're afraid to get tested, and they're embarrassed
Absolutely.
To get tested.
Absolutely.
Isn't that right?
Absolutely, yeah. You know, my involvement in the NAMES Project is something that is near and dear to my heart, but it's a voluntary position. My principal employment is actually with the Community AIDS Network, and one of the things that we do as a statewide and an increasingly regional entity is to work really hard to build testing into more routine medical settings and to help people to understand that HIV testing is really part of overall health.
You really, if you want to get a test for this, you have to take active steps on your own to do that. You would like to change that. How would that be changed?
Well, fortunately, last year the legislature passed a bill that does allow physicians to roll an HIV test up into a panel of tests. So in other words, just like a diabetes test or heart disease test and so forth, you can actually check a box on the lab slip. You just have to notify the patient that that's being done and note that in the progress note. So we are making baby steps towards that moment when it was just truly automatic and routine. Mm-hmm. We're getting there. But yes, we still are working very hard to get patients to have conversations with their doctors about their health and to include HIV in that conversation.
There are cultural factors at work here, too, in Duval County, Justin. In Duval, African Americans account for 66% of new HIV and AIDS cases. And when you talk to, say, Dr. Kelly Wells, the head of the Duval County Health Department, she'll talk about how health officials are working, particularly in African American communities, to eradicate stigma around this disease. That's also a big challenge, isn't it?
It is, and there are some marketing materials within the minority communities in partnership with between the Florida Department of Health and the AIDS Healthcare Foundation. I noticed those, and you know, if you have driven on Interstate 95, just north of downtown, there is a billboard there, and kind of targeting that community. And you know, they're still going back to that stigma. There is the stigma that comes from
that it's a gay disease.
It is a gay disease, but as well as within the African American community, our churches are not necessarily doing their part.
What do you mean?
Their part in educating, and is stigmatizing.
How so?
Stigmatizing HIV, linking that to HIV is a gay disease, and it is not that.
Anyone
can
get
HIV. Yes.
You've been HIV positive since 2001.
The journey began in 2001. In 2007, I was diagnosed.
You were diagnosed.
Yes.
You weren't diagnosed for 6 years.
Correct.
While you were positive.
Right.
And so what's your treatment like today? Can you share that?
I sure can. I actually take, amazingly, I take two pills, and that is all I take.
That's all you need.
That's all I need, and they're both once a day.
Let's go to a few calls. World AIDS Day is Friday. The AIDS Memorial Quilt will be unveiled in downtown City Hall at noon today with a special proclamation by Mayor Curry, 549-2937. Jimmy is downtown. Hi, Jimmy. Good morning. Jimmy, are you there? Yep, go ahead, Jimmy. Go ahead.
Okay, thanks. So I was going to make a quick comment about the stigma and about what I think would be a great new direction for the World AIDS Week Committee. A lot of this has been focused on prevention for so long, but now with some of the medications that are available, there's primary prevention, which means that folks who are HIV positive, if they're treatment compliant and taking their little pill or two every day, they're actually undetectable. And if you're undetectable, you can't transmit the virus. And then on the other side, there's actually a prophylactic pill called, we call it PrEP. It has a scientific name, but the acronym is PrEP, that allows people who are negative to take this pill every single day and stay negative. So there are, you know, new ways to approach this that don't require some of the old interventions. Just some thoughts.
Yes, thanks for that, Jimmy. Dr. Wilson.
Well, I think Jimmy's got his finger on the pulse. That's exactly right. So the movement that we've made over the last arguably 10 years, but certainly the last 5 years, is to shift away from some of the lower impact, high cost prevention efforts, things like outreach to health fairs, a lot of media campaigns, and move to solutions that we know, in fact, work. And so getting people who have HIV virally suppressed lowers the likelihood of transmission, and getting folks who don't have it on medications to prevent them from becoming infected seem to work.
Here's another email about this from a listener. The highest risk population, gay men are using the medication PrEP. It's supposed to prevent exposure, but it isn't 100% effective. Are you worried this will lead to younger gay men engaging in more unprotected sex?
So there is a other side to every coin. And the short answer is that we do share that concern. The ideal method for prevention is a combination of both medication and condom use. When condoms are used in conjunction with medication, the likelihood of becoming infected is nearly zero.
Here's another email. Kids aren't taught about this. The AIDS epidemic, the gay rights movement, or the AIDS crisis in school, is that leading to a false sense of security among young people? Justin Bell.
Thank you for that question. Actually, you know, as I travel with the AIDS Memorial Quilt, I hear that often. I've never heard of the quilt. I don't know what AIDS is. And that's
astounding to me. I mean, when the AIDS epidemic blew up, you know, everybody on Earth seemed to be worried about it. And now we've got a whole generation of young people who don't know about this. It's incredible. I'm sorry to interrupt you. Go ahead,
no,
please.
But you're spot on, Melissa. I mean, globally, we have had hundreds of thousands of individuals die from AIDS-related conditions. And it just boggles my mind as to why we are not teaching this within our history lessons, because this was history, and it is important. And that could also be part of that key factor in education.
Education is key, which leads us back to today's ceremony. The AIDS Memorial Quilt will be on display all week at City Hall. Dr. Wilson, what else is happening around town this week leading up to Friday, which is World AIDS Day?
Well, we do have a number of events. It's important to note, and I think people in Jacksonville should be proud of it, that Jacksonville is actually one of the few cities in the nation that, in fact, observes an entire week of events around World AIDS Day. Tuesday, November 28th, for example, we're going to have a community-wide condom blitz. As we've mentioned, condoms are a pretty important prevention strategy. And so we're going to make free condoms available to the citizens of Jacksonville throughout town in different locations, all of which can be found on our website. And I think Justin will give you that after we're done. But that's November 28th on Thursday the 30th, we'll have a HIV testing event at each of the local colleges, several campuses of FSCJ and JU, I think, will be testing, UNF. We've had fantastic support from a lot of our local colleges. There's a poetry reading competition, actually, that was started about 7 years ago. that will be held on Wednesday night, Wednesday evening. And of course, we have our awards luncheon on Friday, December 1st itself.
So a lot happening. Where can people go online to learn more?
Actually, the most active place to find us is at our Facebook page, which is NAFL World AIDS Day Committee. And that's on Facebook. And all of the events are located on the Facebook page with details. We have a wonderful, I have to mention, and we have a great volunteer who keeps our Facebook page and our Twitter account up to date almost continuously. I would like to add one more special event, if I could, and that it would be our, we'll close out the week on Friday evening of December 1st, and that is with our Service of Remembrance and Hope. And it is an interfaith service hosted by the Arlington Congregational Church on at 431 University Boulevard.
Very nice. And find them on Facebook. Come on out to City Hall today. And thanks for raising awareness. Dr. Max Wilson of the NAMES Project Foundation and AIDS and HIV advocate and peer counselor Justin Bell. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Melissa.
Thank you, Melissa.
All right. Much more still ahead later. Cole Pepper on the Jaguars' playoff hopes after a loss to Arizona, but they're still in the hunt. And up next, First Coast Success profiles one of the most unique businesses in town, Eco Relics. Back in a moment.
Hendricks Avenue Baptist Church is a place to experience Christ's presence and God's Spirit in a vibrant faith community. HAB celebrates diversity, seeks to bridge differences, and journeys together in an honest and authentic search for truth. HABchurch.com. Find a different way of being Baptist.
Support WJCT this Giving Tuesday. Tell the world that you believe in public media and trust us to bring the best in news, arts, education, and inspiring programming to the First Coast. Visit wjct.org/giving. WJCT and Vistar Credit Union are honoring the memory of Fred Rogers with the 15th annual Mr. Rogers Sweater Drive. The drive runs through November 30th and accepts new and gently used sweaters, jackets, and blankets. Contributions may be dropped off at WJCT and all Vistar Credit Union branches, Two Men in a Truck, and the Tom Bush family of dealerships. For more information, log on to wjct.org. Contributions will be donated to selected nonprofit facilities within the First Coast area.
Welcome back. Well, they are a unique local business focused on reducing waste, repurposing supplies, and providing reclaimed and discounted building materials to the whole community. They are also one of the coolest places in town to visit for interesting and unusual objects and antiques. In today's edition of First Coast Success, Karen Bruni Mathis of the Financial News and Daily Record talks to Michael and Ann Murphy, founders of Eco Relics.
Michael and Ann Murphy launched a new business in an old building 3 years ago downtown, and now Eco Relics is considered a destination shopping experience. The Murphys bought and renovated a former railroad depot on Stockton Street to buy and sell and recycle architectural salvage and construction materials, as well as stuff from Liberace albums to circular staircases to toys. Michael and Ann Murphy, welcome to First Coast Success.
Thank you.
What motivated you to open the business in 2014?
Probably a midlife crisis. We were both looking for something else to do with our lives, and we combined Michael's love of architectural and restoring old houses with my staunch environmentalism.
And how does it work? How does the business work? How do you bring all of your materials? How do you choose all of your materials, and who buys them?
Michael does a lot of the buying.
Yeah, I'm definitely the buyer. I'm a rabid buyer. We get things from every conceivable. People bring them in. We buy them. Go to tons of auctions. Buy out liquidations. People occasionally donate things, although not very often. We do deconstruction.
Well, we buy from individuals, so we get quite a few emails a day with people looking to sell their items, whether, you know, it might be their, you know, grandmother's attic that they're trying to clean up, or, you know, somebody passed away in the family and they want to figure out a way to move the stuff that's in the house. We also have a little micro economy around Eco Relics, so we have people that know that we'll buy things from them, and they go out and specifically, you know, dumpster dive or go look for things for us, or on their way to the metal recycling places, they will stop by Eco Relics because they know they'll get a little bit more for their metal.
And contractors are doing restoration, and they're tearing apart an old house, and maybe the people are going to modernize it, so they bring us whatever they have and try to, you know, recycle it so it's not put through the landfill. So, yeah, that's how we get the majority of our
items.
Be
the question should be, how don't we get our stuff?
What are some of the more unusual items that you have there now? Because it's a big building.
It is.
Yeah, it's over 50,000 square feet, and then we have about an acre and a half on back. So we have over 100,000 square feet of items, and then we've got another 50,000. We've got another 50,000 feet of just other items we have that people can, you know, if we don't have whatever we have in the store, we've got in other places.
So you have other warehouses,
right,
that
right.
You... What would you consider some of the more unusual items that you have there right now?
I think we have a really awesome collection of toys at the moment. So if you're really into antique or even, you know, semi-antique toys, we bought out a guy who collected that kind of stuff.
We got a square Steinway concert piano in the other day. That
was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's sort of unusual. We just got the back bar out of the Palace Saloon.
Saloon.
Yeah, we got the back bar.
It came in and it left today to its new home in Mayport.
Yeah, we restored it. We restored what it needed to be done to it, and we just sold it. Where did that sell to?
To a new bar that's opening up in Mayport. Yeah. I don't know the name of it, but it is. They're on their way. They're getting the permits and doing what they need to do.
And you also have the two of the lions from the University Club.
We do. Yes, two of these big, huge, ominous-looking lions.
Yeah, they were from the 1800s.
And
they were
built
in the 1800s.
And you also have a woodworking shop.
We do. We have five full-time, as I like to call them, wood whisperers that do all sorts of very, very cool things with our reclaimed lumber and also the slabs of lumber that we have, so the live edge slabs that we've been accumulating from sources, and we're going to start slicing out our own soon from tree services, which is very exciting.
Yeah, we have two sawmills also where we can make slabs up to 84 inches in width.
This is a big jump from when you opened.
Mm-hmm.
Did you envision this is where you would be?
Not at all, I don't think.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, we really changed direction. We found out originally we thought we were going to be dealing mostly with contractors. Probably the majority of our customers are women, not men. We'd envision most of our customers are going to be men, but it's actually mostly women. We've got interior decorators, designers, DIY people, and a lot of husbands get dragged to Eco Relics on the weekend for the honey-do list.
And then you also do custom work for companies and organizations who
yes.
need tables. And
yes, we've done a lot of commercial construction jobs in the 2 years we've had the wood shop opened. And it's been kind of exciting when you walk into a place and you see, you know, a countertop that we built or...
Displays.
A display or whatever
we've done most
it might
of the
be.
We've just, done most of the interiors of the microbreweries in town. And
yep.
A lot of stores, restaurants, tables. We do
bar
a lot
tops.
Of live edge tables, bar tops, yeah, all kinds of things like that.
Well, you have so many items there. How would you describe the turnover of the items? Do things sell quickly or do they have a specific shelf life? How do you look at that? It's a whole different business model.
It is a different business model, and most of the time we don't know. And, you know, funnily enough, it's usually the things that get dragged in where I'm like, oh my gosh, that is never going to sell. And then, like, the next day, someone will come in and be like, oh my gosh, I've been looking for one of these my whole life.
We sell whatever we get. It doesn't matter what it is. It doesn't matter how crazy it is. I mean, there's a buyer for everything.
Well, Michael and Ann Murphy, owners of Eco Relics, thank you for joining First Coast Success.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much.
Read more about Eco Relics in this week's Daily Record. Well, did you see this? There was a worldwide uproar online over the last few days after a mother posted a photo on Facebook of herself breastfeeding her child in public. This happened at Disneyland in California. 24-year-old Brittany Medina was feeding her 10-month-old son, Micah, after he got fussy while they were waiting in line at Disney California Adventure. Now, the photo showed two frowning women in the background, Medina says, were judging her and commenting loudly that she should nurse in a restroom rather than in public. The issue of whether it's appropriate for women to breastfeed in public has been around for generations. Opinions are very divided. Many believe it's a private act that should be carried out behind closed doors, but more and more younger women are flinging that tradition aside. Their position, breasts are designed to feed babies. And breastfeeding is a public health issue, as more breastfeeding leads to healthier infants. Positive medical news to share on this. Breastfeeding rates are climbing in the U.S. The CDC says as of 2011, 79% of newborn infants started with breastfeeding. But here's the problem. They didn't continue for as long as doctors would like. Of those babies born in 2011, just 49% were still breastfeeding at 6 months, only 27% at a year old. Professional lactation support can help mothers start and continue breastfeeding. And one local doctor providing that support is Dr. Rana Alyssa, pediatrician at UF Health. She's the medical director of the newborn nursery there. It's one of the highest birth rate hospitals in the city. And since Dr. Alyssa became medical director of the newborn nursery, the breastfeeding rate among new moms giving birth there has nearly tripled. But Dr. Alyssa says there's still a long way to go to increase breastfeeding rates locally and nationally. And she joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa.
Thanks for being with us. And so on the positive side, you've done a very good job increasing breastfeeding rates, nearly tripling them at UF Health. Congratulations.
Thank you so much. Yeah, well, it was not easy at all. And it was, I have to mention that this is a joint effort by the entire team. One person cannot do it alone.
What have you done to increase rates?
It was mainly education. It was you have to educate the mothers. We increased the hiring of lactation consultant. The administration had a big role on supporting us with that effort, because it was problematic, you know, when we started. No one would want to breastfeed.
Women have to really be nudged and encouraged to do it, don't they?
Absolutely. I mean, it's very easy to just hand them formula when they ask for it. But it's not easy, you know, out of the busy schedule we have to go and educate mom. So we needed more team. We hired more team. We brought donor milk to our hospital. In our newborn nursery, we have donor milk, and we are the only hospital that we have donor milk for the newborn, for term and for newborn nursery population, which is late preterm and term infants. We hired a bigger team. We educated the entire staff, including nursing assistant. And that's so many hours of education. And that's, you know, mm-hmm. that's, we paid a lot of money for that education.
All this effort pays off because breastfed babies are healthier. The data's clear.
Absolutely, absolutely. And that's the problem with the controversial topic. And, you know, out of the two frowning women that saw the mom who's breastfeeding at Disney, and like you said, it was viral. The problem is not only the to upset a woman. The problem is even the healthcare. Not, we are not on the same page. However, you have American Academy of Pediatrics, the World Health Organization, and the UNICEF. We are all on the same page that we have benefits of breastfeeding. Nobody can argue with that.
Is now, as I said, a lot of women are starting with breastfeeding now, mm-hmm. but they're not continuing. I had two kids. I breastfed both of them. It was extremely difficult.
Good for you.
particularly with the first baby. Mm-hmm. It was painful and hard. And even with a lactation consultant, I had to learn how to do it. It wasn't easy. It doesn't come naturally. I stuck with it. I used a breast pump at work. And back then, there was no mandated place for women to go and pump like there is now. I had to be extremely determined to get both my daughters to, I think I stopped around 9 months with both of them.
Good for you.
But it was so mm-hmm. hard.
It is.
What can we
hard.
Do to make it easier
sure.
for moms?
I mean, you know, unfortunately, being hard and being, you know, sleep deprived, don't forget that. Like yourself, I did breastfeed both my kids for 7 months. I wasn't able to do it more, but I did it by the American Academy of Pediatrics guidelines.
But I wanted to go the full year, but I just didn't make it. And I kept supplementing with formula with each passing week. And then finally, but at least
but
I got
at
as
least
far
you
as
did
I did.
It. Good for you. So the recommendation is the exclusive breastfeeding for first 6 months. And then as long as mom and baby would like. Now, how difficult it is? It is very difficult. It's not easy. And it's like I said, it's very easy to just hand this mom formula. But
and
it's
hospitals
not,
are still doing that. They hand you a bag.
Well, we stopped doing this
you stopped
at UF.
Doing that at UF.
Absolutely. This is, so what we did is we are moving toward becoming baby-friendly hospital. And so we accomplished the steps required. And these bags were first to go. We can't just, you know, advertise for formula. We can't have pictures of formula on the wall. We can't accept even anything as simple as pens from formula companies. That was very, very important.
So that's part of being a baby-friendly hospital.
Yes, absolutely. I'm not, well, UF is not yet baby-friendly hospital, we are on the way, and we are doing all the steps required.
Let's go to Mitch in Ortega now. Go ahead, Mitch, you're on the air.
Yeah, yes, Melissa, I just wanted to tie into your last segment and just note that it's absolutely critical for mothers who intend on breastfeeding their children to be tested for HIV and make sure that they are negative for HIV before breastfeeding their children because mm-hmm. HIV can be passed to the child from the mother through breast milk.
Thanks for that, Mitch.
Yeah. I wanted to make is, that if a mother who is breastfeeding is taking any HIV-related medications, to be very careful with that because a number of them are very detrimental to the baby and can cause serious harm. So
sure. Thanks for those points. And we're a little tight, Mitch. We're a little tight on time, but thanks for those points, Doctor.
So it's very, very good point. And I have to mention that in United States, HIV-positive mother is an absolute contraindication to breastfeed. And the good thing is what Mitch mentioned, that we have to screen for HIV. Now, the Florida state is one of the states in USA that mandate third trimester HIV testing for all pregnant women. So we are very careful about that, and we do luckily follow that.
What is your final tip for new mothers to encourage and stick with breastfeeding?
Well, I want to mention a similarity between breastfeeding and between organic food. It's natural. You know, we all do everything possible to do natural, especially these days. This is natural. The benefits, they are countless of benefits. Yes, it is difficult. I tell moms it is difficult for the first 2 or 3 days, but it's better for the rest of this and that the mom's entire life and for the baby's
it's
entire life.
It's healthy for mom and baby.
Forever, for the future.
My kids never got an ear infection.
I'm telling you.
And I know, I can't prove it, but I know the breastfeeding
breastfeeding home.
Yes, and it is. There are so much benefits. Yes, it is hard, but you are determined. You are mom. You should be determined to exclusively breastfeed. Like I said, first 3 days are the hardest, and then that's it. And my last point I have to mention, the pediatricians in the community, they have a very, very big role to help moms with breastfeeding. You know, these moms need a lot of support and a lot of help. They need to communicate the benefits, exactly what we do in newborn nursery at UF. They need even to educate themselves as much as I did when I started at UF.
Well, kudos to you, Dr. Alyssa. She is the medical director of the newborn nursery at UF Health. She has tripled breastfeeding rates there and is not done yet. Thanks for sharing all this with us.
Thank you so much for having me, Melissa.
Thank you. Well, the holiday's over. Thanksgiving is anyway. How much did you have to eat? So many of us overeat during the holidays, and it's so hard to stay on track. We've got some timely tips, though, as we welcome certified weight loss and life coach and former WJCT employee, Valerie Benton. Hey, good morning.
Hey, Melissa. Good morning. I'm really excited to be here.
I'm excited to have you, and I am just as guilty of this as anybody. I stress eat during the holidays. It's so easy to do. It's so hard to stay on your eating plan at this time of year. What are you counseling people to do right now?
Well, I'll tell you, a lot of the reasons why people stress eat is because there's more things you have to get done. Right? People have busy lives normally, but now you have to buy gifts. If you're in business, you might have to buy client gifts. You have to get the house ready. So there's a lot of pressure to get a lot more done. And a lot of times when people feel that sense of overwhelm and anxiety, it drives them to eat. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of food around.
It's so easy. It's everywhere.
It's so easy. Yes.
And so what you say is tune into your physical hunger and differentiate that from your emotional hunger.
Yes. And that is really, really important. So there are two types of hunger. Of course, there's physical hunger where, you know, your stomach feels empty. It might make noises. Your mouth gets wet. Your body might feel weak if you really go a long time. So it's important to know those physical feelings. Then there's emotional feelings that you might think about eating something to make yourself feel better. For example, you're angry and you want to use food to stuff down your fury. Or you're lonely and you might be looking to food to really comfort you. Or you're just feeling stressed with everything going on and you need like a pacifier. And there's a bunch of donuts right nearby.
Yep, exactly
like,
right.
Well, maybe I'll just chomp on down. And
I know
those.
It. You even have a hunger scale. People need to say to themselves, where am I on the hunger scale before they eat that donut?
Yes, and that's a really important thing to learn. And I teach my clients this. And a great example, it's a 1 to 10 scale. So minus 10 would be if you hadn't eaten, let's say, Monday, since last Friday. So most of us don't get that hungry. The plus 10 is like Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're snacking all day long. Then the big meal comes and you have turkey and mashed potatoes and gravy and vegetables. And then, of course, there's the desserts. And I don't know about you, but at our Thanksgiving, there were probably 7 pies for 12
people.
Oh,
my goodness. So, we had 2. But you guys did it upright.
Yeah,
but now you're paying the price. Yeah.
Nope, not really.
Not really. Yeah. Oh, because you're obviously good at this. You probably just took a little
taste. I practice
taste.
What I preach.
That's right.
So what I recommend is if you can picture on this hunger scale a minus 2. So minus 2, you actually physically do feel hungry. That's when you should start eating. And then when you get to plus 2, that's when you feel satisfied. You're not stuffed. You've had enough. You still feel light and energetic in your body. And that's when you would stop eating. So you start at minus 2 and stop at plus 2.
This is excellent advice to get us through the next month. Now, if you are struggling with holiday stress eating, Valerie has a free video on her website, How to Stop Stress Eating.
Yeah,
she helps professional women and everybody say goodbye to those extra pounds. You can go to her website for more at ValerieBentonCoaching.com. I'm going to remember that plus 2 number.
Right, for the minus next, 2, plus 2.
Minus 2 and plus 2. Say goodbye to holiday stress eating forever. Valerie Benton, a pleasure, and a former WJCT employee. Good to see you in the
Thank
studio.
Thank you so much, Melissa. It was a pleasure being here.
Thanks for being with us. Again, that's ValerieBentonCoaching.com. And in a moment, Cole Pepper on the Jaguars' playoff hopes. That's next.
There are 12 days of Christmas, and this year there are 12 days left for Congress.
There's desperation here among Republicans like I've never seen in Congress to get this done.
Tax reform, repeal and replace, a Dream Act. What does and does not make it onto this year's congressional Christmas list? Next time on 1A. Weekdays at 10 after First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
On the next Fresh Air, comic and actor Patton Oswalt. He has a new Netflix comedy special called Annihilation. It's in part about living in the Trump era. It's also about the unexpected death of his wife last year and having to find a way to prevent himself and his young daughter from falling to pieces. Join us. Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
The exhibit Florida Before Statehood is at the Brevard Museum of History and Natural Science in Cocoa. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll visit the exhibit, which combines a display from the Museum of Florida History with documents and artifacts from the FHS archives. We'll discuss the amazing journey of Nathaniel Bishop and bluegrass music. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
Take a drive with us into the Blues Horizon every Monday and Wednesday night at 11. The best in classic and modern blues as part of WJCT's After Hours. Every Monday and Wednesday night at 11 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world, your music.
I don't want no woman telling me what to do.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, the Jaguars lose, the Gators find their coach, and the Seminoles may be looking for one.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper, wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Culpepper's on the line with more about that Jaguars loss in Arizona and the rest of the weekend sports news and notes. Hey, Cole, what a disappointment for Jacksonville.
It really was a game that I think most assumed the Jaguars would win, particularly because Blaine Gabbert was playing quarterback for the Arizona Cardinals. But the Jaguars did not show up with their A game. They came out flat early on, trailed by 10 at halftime, and then made some bad plays and bad decisions late in the game, including Doug Marrone admitting that he got greedy rather than just playing for overtime after the Jaguars had come back to tie the game up at 24. He tried to throw a pass on a second down deep in their own end. It was dropped by Marquise Lee. That allowed the Cardinals to call timeout on the following play. The Jaguars punted it away, and then Gabbert, as he rarely did as a Jaguar, made a couple of big plays late in the game to set up a game-winning field goal, and Phil Dawson, a 19-year veteran in the National Football League, kicked the longest field goal he had ever kicked, 57 yards, to beat the Jaguars 27-24. Plenty of blame to go around, as mentioned. It was not a well-coached game. The offensive line struggled. Wide receivers dropping passes. The running game wasn't there. Even the Jaguars defense that came in ranked number one of the National Football League made mistakes that led to Arizona touchdowns. The Jaguars defense did score a touchdown for the sixth time this year when Calais Campbell returned a fumble against his old team to help the Jaguars reignite things in the second half. But the Jaguars lose. They fall back into a first-place tie in the AFC South with the Tennessee Titans. And now they need to look forward as they take on the Indianapolis Colts at home, first of three straight at Everbank Field coming up on Sunday. One injury to keep an eye on. Telvin Smith left the game with a concussion. Not sure about his availability going forward. We have to keep a very close eye on the guy who has been one of the best players on the Jaguars defense this year.
Yeah, so not season ending, but very little margin for error for them the rest of the season now, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think when you start looking at the injuries on offense, if they have more injuries on offense, it's going to put them in a really bad situation. They can win games with their defense, and they very nearly did yesterday. It was basically Blake Bortles running the ball and the defense that was the difference in the game for the Jaguars. But you said it exactly right. This is not a high margin for error team at all right now.
All right. Speaking of football, let's talk college football for a minute. The Gators have a new coach, Dan Mullen.
They bring back Dan Mullen, who was the offensive coordinator when
both Tim Tebow and Chris Leak played quarterback there. He'd been the head coach at the Mississippi State and done very well there if you use the traditional performance of Mississippi State as a guide. He had really had as much success as anybody's had there in Starkville, Mississippi. He has a great reputation and resume with quarterbacks in the past. When he was under Urban Meyer at Utah, he coached Alex Smith, who became the number one pick in the NFL draft. He also coached, as mentioned, Chris Leak and Tim Tebow at Florida, and Dak Prescott at Mississippi State, now the Cowboys quarterback. That's one thing that's been sorely missing from Gainesville for quite some time, is somebody who can really develop quarterbacks. They really haven't developed a quarterback who has stayed all the way through, really going back to Tim Tebow. And so they need to do that. They make the hire. He was really their third choice in some ways. They had flirted with Chip Kelly, the former Oregon coach, and he wound up with UCLA. Scott Frost, who's leading the undefeated UCF Knights, turned down the opportunity to have a conversation after his team finished off a regular season unbeaten, beating USF over the weekend. So third choice, but a guy who, when the process began, I thought was going to likely be the front runner. Now, my mind changed six times in between the time they fired Jim McElwain, and now they wind up with a guy who has familiarity in Gainesville and has a pedigree with quarterbacks, and I think you can really sell that right now.
All right, a little tight on time, but let's talk the college football playoff picture very quickly. Cole's picks as we look ahead in your crystal ball. What are you thinking?
Well, with Alabama and Miami, number one and number two, losing, now we've got four games coming up this weekend, conference championship games, will all impact the national title picture and who will be going to the playoffs. Clemson looks to be in the best shape. Oklahoma looks very good as well. If Wisconsin can win, they're in. And then it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, what else happens and what the committee would do with UCF if they remain undefeated. I don't think they can get in, but with Wisconsin and UCF as the only remaining unbeaten teams, it could bring up a pretty good debate. Once all things are said and done, I like Oklahoma and Clemson, and Auburn probably is the wild card at this time.
And last but not least, let's talk about the Icemen playing at home this week. Three games. People really embracing hockey this winter here in Jacksonville.
And it will be your last chance until the middle of December to see them, Melissa. They play Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, games at the arena. And they have already developed some very rabid fans, some of whom have decided that you know, they're going to form their own supporters group, their own booster club. So that's pretty good success engaging with the fans there in the first year.
How about that? Well, follow Cole on Twitter at Cole Pepper. Download the Sam and Cole podcast for more sports news and notes. Thanks, Cole.
Thanks, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Kevin Murchart. Michelle Corum runs the board during the hour, and the show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Shevchik. 1A's up next as a look at lawmakers' wish list tops the agenda. Congress is counting down to the end of the year. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville, your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.